Hello, 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 everyone. How are you? Hope you're having an incredible, incredible day, and may peace be upon you. Thank you, thank you, thank you for joining my show. Yes, I can with me, your host, Dr. Izdihar Jamil. And today I have the inspirational, the courageous, someone who fights for the BIPOC community. Like she said, that is her lifelong mission. Beautiful Sonali Fizz. So Sonali, welcome, 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 and say hello.
Hello, Izdihar.
Thank you, Sonali. It's my pleasure, and welcome to the show. And Sonali and I, today we're going to be talking about the courage, the authenticity, the claiming your roots, for especially for BIPOC community or marginalized community people, for Black, Indigenous people. And kind of like seeing what's possible out there. And Sonali is a leadership consultant for Black, Indigenous people of color, radio and producer, talk show, and especially featuring spotlighting voices for the BIPOC community. And she's also the TEDx curator and TEDx speaker. For those of you who don't know, Sonali was the curator for my TED Talk Revolution in December 2021. So what a blessing to have you today, Sonali.
I know. That was 5 months ago. We were in the same room, that energy, right? Talking about what was our theme? Revolutionize.
Yes.
Revolution. Incredible people in that room. And your talk was so inspirational, Izdihar. There were tears, there was laughter, there was, we were all just so energized by your voice and your message. This is a thrill to see you again and be with you in conversation.
Thank you so much, Sonali. Because one of the things that I told Sonali, which is part of this conversation today, is that thank you for, you know, sharing my voice, because for so long, I don't know if you know, but I applied to 9 places. So it's like a no, 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 and no, you know, so many no's, to the point that I'm like, I'm heartbroken, you know, and I feel that I wasn't good enough. I feel like, oh, this and that. But I think like the key as well for me and those who are from marginalized community, from BIPOC community, is to keep on going and make your idea better, and the right one will kind of like show up. So Sonali, I wanted to talk about this life mission of yours, sharing the voices of Black, Indigenous people, marginalized people. What kind of like triggered you to this pathway? Because it's not the most easiest or the most straightforward thing. If the society is here, you actually going against the society, like going like this way, because you're trailblazing a path that is so hard and can be challenging at times. So what kind of like triggered you into this pathway?
Thank you. Thank you for that question, Izdihar. And I thank you for acknowledging that it is not the easiest path. It's not the simple, straightforward, you know, narrow, easy pathway. I started off with a lot of anger. Mm. Anger has been the driving force for this work. Mm. Mm-hmm. I will be honest about that. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't started from an inspiring, uplifting, place of wanting to amplify BIPOC voices. And BIPOC is an acronym for Black, Indigenous People of Color. Mm. It really came from a place of anger and frustration of seeing a certain type of woman constantly being celebrated and centered and getting all of the speaking opportunities.
Yes.
At the expense of Black women and Indigenous women constantly being sidelined and suppressed and, overlooked. And also being used as the voiceless. And I'm talking about the white, able-bodied, cute, female, the heteronormative female. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to take a stand for that. I was seeing so many extraordinary, especially Black women, speaking up for causes and issues they care about, overgiving and overdoing, you know, and just really being overlooked for, mm-hmm. you know, for a lot of the issues that were affecting us in the culture. So again, that impetus, the starting point was from a place of anger, which has now kind of dissipated into this joyous work that I'm doing for Black and Brown women. So yes. That was the start, you know, what is a fun, flowery beginning, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, some people was like, they had this a revelation from this, right? Yeah. But I think like you've showed that how over time you can transmute it into something that is beautiful, something that is meaningful, something that is impactful. And I know, like, you know, there's a saying in our community, like people of color, we have to work 2 times, 3 times, 5 times, 10 times harder than anyone else. And then you and I, we both have children. I mean, you have a teenager now, where did the time goes, where did the time flies? I have young children. Is that the kind of thing we want to tell our children, right, Sanani? They have to work, you know, my daughter Nadra, for example, like you have to work 10 times, 5 times harder than anyone else.
And why should they?
Correct.
You know, why should they? They shouldn't have to, you know, there's that immigrant mindset that we constantly have to bear, which is, you know, keep going, keep pushing, keep driving, keep, you know, your reward is waiting for you on the other side. You know, we have to just constantly overgive and overdo just to be considered, or just to, you know, receive a seat at their table.
Yeah, so, which is like mind boggling for me to do that. And if you've seen Nada, she's like, oh no, I'm gonna do what I wanna do. And which is the right thing. But you know, you and I, we have that mindset or that blueprint that kind of like work harder and harder and harder and harder, and to the point of exhaustion or frustration. Sometimes I feel, Sanali, because I'm growing up in Malaysia, part of the British colony. Somehow I feel that my ancestor roots, because of that colonization, had maybe had an impact to, you know, to my blueprint over the years, that one race is superior than the other because we've been colonized. In your conversation with the community, does this ancestral roots, because I know that is something that you kind of like talked about before when I was asking about my TED talk about ancestral roots, do you feel that kind of have a trigger into how we behave, that blueprint of colonization in my case, or something that happened in the past? I just want to bring this to awareness, to know that sometimes it's just beyond us, right? There's something more at play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I too come from a colonized country. My roots are based in Sri Lanka, and an island nation in the Indian Ocean. We were colonized by the Dutch, the Portuguese, and the British.
You have three in one.
It's an extraordinary, you know, there's so much historical trauma that was caused by colonization that still exists in my country. And I believe, sadly, it's going to take generations to undo that harm, you know, and decolonize the way and go back to the way we were before, you know, our oppressor came and divided us. And here, living in the United States, there's so much systemic pain and power that keeps Black people, you know, from the opportunities that they so deserve, that keep people of color, you know, having to constantly overwork and overdo just to get, you know, an interview or an opportunity. It's, you know, so there's so many different aspects of this that are at play, Mr. Har. It's not just the colonial construct, but, you know, and racism is a huge part of the construct that we live under here in the United States. And it's insidious, and it's not always visible. And, you know, it's not always have a name. We're still mm-hmm. developing our understanding and our languaging around it. But I feel like Black people have been talking about this for years, and only mm-hmm. now we're listening. Only mm-hmm. now, you know, sadly or not, you know, after George Floyd's murder,
yes.
There was this, it was like a pivotal moment in our society. Mm-hmm. So many people, in, you know, just started to wake up. That was just last summer, you know, or two yes. summers ago, excuse me. And so we're just waking up to this understanding of understanding our own ancestral roots. That's why I do the work I do, mm-hmm. to bring us back to our own our rootedness, our connection, our ancestral truth, our traditional mm-hmm. knowledge, to work from there, you know, instead of what it is that society is asking from us, but to come back to the truth of who we are. And developing our messages and our stories from there, right? What yes. is it that we have to say instead of what other people want to hear from us? That's an absolutely. Important distinction, you know?
Yes, like, you know, what we have to say, the voices, and also with George Floyd, it shouldn't take that tragedy or that particular event to suddenly wake up the world, right? Like, it shouldn't take the cost, the life of a person
exactly
to kind of, oh, hang on a minute, we need to pay attention. It shouldn't take the loss of the life of that person. We should always be kind of like, be open or be aware at the very least to have a conversation regardless of that particular event, because it is heartbreaking.
And also, Istihar, I feel like Black and brown folks are constantly in this place of re-traumatization. We're constantly mm. having to re-traumatize ourselves, you know, in order to share a message with the world. You know, we have a lot, you know, it's like we have so much beauty and creativity yes. and, you know, so much historical truth and joy that needs to be mm. celebrated and shared with the world. Our creative mm-hmm. truth, our creative energy. I want to be about exploring that.
Mm,
not that just curiosity. Talking about our traumatic experiences. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And this curiosity that we have, this culture, we come from the culture that are very family based. That is, if you're a Westerner, you, unless you live in where we used to live, our roots, you wouldn't understand this like concept of like family. Like, you know, my mom, my grandma would have family dinner with 20 and 30 people. It's no big deal. You know, we'd always have that tight niche together. Like people that comes over would always go through our door here in America. Like, I haven't gone through my neighbor's door, let alone like they've come through my door, but I haven't gone through their door. So I want to talk about this truth that you talk about, our ancestor, our voice, like beyond the anger that people see or propaganda, you know, kind of like tap into that. What is this voice, Sonali? What is our truth? What is the community wants to say apart from, hey, excuse me, but what is this heart exactly. that we want yes. people to know?
That is why I do the work I do, Istihar. Mm-hmm. Let's get into that part. Mm-hmm. You know, let's get into what is it that I have to say that either my ancestors worked so hard, right, to amplify their voice. They didn't get the opportunity. They didn't have the extent of choice mm-hmm. and the freedom to speak to their own truths. Mm-hmm. And so they lie buried in us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? What is our ancestral truth? That is why I built BIWOC Revolutionaries Take the Mic. That's mm-hmm. the incubator that I created so that we can drop in, unravel our stories, mm-hmm. right? Where white supremacy is not allowed in the door. Mm-hmm. This is important.
Mm-hmm.
Where Black, Indigenous people of color can have the courage to sit down and unpack some of these stories that are difficult to talk about in mixed spaces mm. or in a public way, you know, because we've always had to look at them through the lens of whiteness.
Yes.
We've always had to see ourselves through that white lens.
Mm-hmm.
And who are we when that's removed?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, we're constantly walking on eggshells, or, you know, having to filter our language and our words, filter our accent, you know, it's mental gymnastics for us,
mm-hmm.
color, constantly. So who are we being when we're out there? I wanted to get to the bottom of that. What do we have to say instead of what other people want to hear from us? So it takes some work,
mm-hmm.
but that's what I designed a curriculum to just get us into the bottom of that.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we? What do we have to say for our descendants?
Mm-hmm.
What do we have to say for the ancestors in the making?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do we have to say that our lineage didn't get an opportunity to share with the world? Right? Mm-hmm. What do I have to say that isn't layered and buried by white supremacist tactics?
Mm-hmm.
So it's beautiful when we get to that part. Like right now, I'm in the cohort is ending, and Izhar, I wish I could speak, you know, everything we share in the, you know, in the course,
yes.
confidential, but I wish I could tell you the end result, you know, the incredible freedom and the incredible inner power that those stories and those messages come from
mm-hmm.
when you remove that lens, you know, in how we're perceived from the outside world, and drop into what is it that I want to share with the world, you know?
Yeah, and that's so powerful, right, Sonali, because at times I'm like, it opens up so many possibilities. Oh, actually I can say this, or I can say this. Oh, I don't need someone's permission to actually share about this is how I feel, this is how my culture works, this is how my how I was raised, or this is what's important to me. And then suddenly you'd be like, it can be a scary thing as well, because you're like, oh, can I really do that? But then when you find it, it is this courage, isn't it, that you never know about yourself. It is the love that our ancestors have always had in us.
Yeah,
like it just flows, that love. I suddenly feel this, whew, you know, this love that they feel what they had to fight for, what the joy and the laughter. And sometimes it's just simple things, what we want to be heard, right? Sometimes it's just as simple.
So simple. Yes, it can be very simple. Something that, you know, hasn't been spoken to, that our grandmothers and our mothers didn't have the opportunity to speak to. You know, it could be, you know, maybe it's something more complex and nuanced, mm-hmm. like family trauma, or maybe it's something more detailed, like, you know, colonial trauma and mm-hmm. some of the pain we've had to bear, you know, but reclaiming our voices, this is the time of reclamation.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time of reclaiming our inheritance of loss. This is the time of standing up for what it is in our lineage,
mm-hmm.
you know, standing up for what it makes us more identifiable in the world. So it takes a little bit of courage to do, but we can find that together. That's why I do the work in community, Izhar, mm-hmm. because being in community, you felt that right at the TEDx event you spoke at with these other extraordinary Black and Brown women. But coming into a space where you don't have to weigh other people's, you know, perceptions, where you could drop that and completely be in community to cultivate your message, it gives you, it just frees up a lot of mental chatter. It frees up a lot of that static so that you can just do the work. What is it that I have to say? What does the world need to hear from me? You know? Instead of, you know, instead of having to work through that colonial lens, that part is important. You know, I believe we're here to revolutionize and rethink the way that the system is not working for us. Mm-hmm. It's not working for anybody. You know, it might be working for a very select few, but even they are suffering. They just don't know it.
Yeah. You know? And so the word that I used for the TEDx event, TEDx Stealthron on Revolution, was magical. It was really magical, like the experience of it. Because some of us, we talked about very topic that people do not hear, right? Like on the people don't talk about that particular topic that either that's sensitive or that challenging, or that our voice for so long have been put on a lid. But that TEDx event, so many of us were like sharing different phases of our lives. And that was one of the first time I shared about my story on stage, because I'm like, the last thing I want to do is tell people someone threw poop at my doorstep, right? But that's the last thing I want to do for the world to hear. Or I had doubts wearing the hijab, something that I've worn since I was 11. Like, that's the last thing that I wanted to do. But I decided, like, the only way for me to create a movement to touch people's heart is for me to put my heart out there and share the voice, like, the best way that I can. And again, not using that filter. This is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm going about. And this is how I feel that we should move forward with in creating a revolution, creating a better future. I mean, obviously, I didn't go in and like, I'm going to make people cry today and just go in. Like, it wouldn't work that way. But it's just when people feel your heart, right, Sonali, the truth, your vulnerability, your love, your generosity, your courage. Would you say that is kind of the thing that the world needs to listen to, even though it's a bit scary, even though, you know, it's vulnerable, but they... Under that, people can see your courage, your love, who you are, your character, what you fight for. And you don't have to kind of like bang the drum about it, but that softness and gentleness and that nurturing.
I think what the world is asking for more of is vulnerability, mm-hmm. and authenticity, the intersection of our vulnerability and authenticity. Who are we in that space, you know, outside of this lens that the social media lens, we kind of mm-hmm. show up in our well-curated, cute outfit, and with our, you know, with our face on and our smile on, which is fine. It's great mm-hmm. to look the part. But more to be more real, who are we? You know, what is our story? And speaking from that truth, I think the world needs more of that. Mm-hmm. You know, to really explore who are we when all that is stripped away, right?
Yeah,
that's what I love about getting down to the truth of who we are. When, you know, outside of the social media space, outside of, you know, the person standing on the stage with a mic coming out of their ear, emoting to an audience. Who are we behind that? You know, people want to see behind the curtain now, you know?
Yeah, behind the curtain is like, that's why I feel, you know, because at the moment, leadership is at bankruptcy, because you see politicians and, you know, they hide behind a podium. People can't see their body language. They're so polished. They're so clean. It's so hard to see that vulnerability, that emotion behind them. It's hard to connect, right? But kind of like when you see that intersection of vulnerability and the love and the courage, that's when people just like feel safety. Oh yeah, okay, they start to feel at ease, they start to connect, they start to open up, and it just allows the message to be received, whoever that is listening on that particular space. I have seen politicians, I'm like, I'm not sure I'm gonna vote for that person, because it just like the vulnerability, the truthness, the authenticity. I think that is kind of like, as a community, for us to practice more, What about people that are thinking about the consequences, Sonali? Because sometimes what we say may have a big consequences, either to us or either to the people around them. So how can we kind of like, you know, either manage it or kind of like take it with us, like the consequences that's still going to allow us to share
our
voices?
That is a part of something we work with in the BIPOC spaces. You know, people are concerned about backlash.
Mm-hmm.
People are concerned about, you know, cancel culture. It coming back on them, you know, mm-hmm. and we work through that together in community. That's mm-hmm. an important element to working through the possibilities of what will happen to me if I come out and say this in a public way, you know.
Yes.
What if I, will I have to bear the wrath of my community or mm-hmm. my family? Or, you know, society. And that is something that we hold the space for within that community, within our, this incubator, Izdahar. You know, you can't do it alone. It's yes. it's a lot. And, you know, we learn to talk about that. You know, mm-hmm. we learn to unpack that we cannot cancel each other, that we have to uphold each other and hold each other responsible for the things that we share and say in the world. Yes, but how to do it in a responsible way, in a way that you're not feeling so isolated and scared and vulnerable, you know, coming out with your truth in community gives you immense courage to stand up and speak for that issue that you care about, you know,
mm-hmm.
and do it in a way that makes you feel ready for it, you know, because a lot of times people aren't ready to speak up for that issue or that cause or share that vulnerable story, mm-hmm. you know, and that is okay. That is one thing that I teach my clients, my BIPOC clients, is, you know, a truth is only ready to share, right? When our response, or we don't depend on other people's response to it, right?
Mm.
It is only ready to share when it's ready to be shared as an experienced gift.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I believe, is an important part of this work. You know, we're not always ready to expose and feel that exposed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we need to incubate. Sometimes we need to unpack our stories before it is ready to share with the world. So that's an important aspect of it. Listening deeper to your ancestral truth, listening to your traditional knowledge and wisdom that's been handed down to you by your, lineage,
mm-hmm.
and speaking from that place instead of having to feel this exposed all the time.
Absolutely. And the leaning in to your brothers and sisters, right, in the community.
So vital. So vital. We don't have to do this alone. You don't have to be in your, you know, in your head all the time trying to figure out what is it I want to share with the world. Yeah. Coming in, doing it in community, allowing us to hold that loving, gentle space for you can give you a lot of courage and a lot of clarity. And through way to share what it is that you're here to share.
Absolutely, absolutely beautiful. And as well, like when you're kind of reclaiming your truth, who you are, you're uncertain, and feeling that roots, that beautiful thing, I feel that it also allows you to be accepting of who you truly are, and in return,
yeah.
Given the space to be accepting of others, because you start to see, oh, like, okay, this is how their ancestors, this is how they work, this is their heritage. Same as, you know, we might not be have the same thing, but at least I know what it's like to be in their space, you know, it's a way for me to accept or to just celebrate that person the way it is and the way they aren't. I mean, they're whole, perfect and complete the way they aren't and the way they're not the same with us. So I think like you kind of touch a lot of beautiful points from the ancestor, from the truth, from breaking through the lens and leaning in the community, and that the truth the truth will come up whenever it's ready. Sometimes the truth is
at the point right.
that it needed to like be loved a little bit more, right?
That's right. Yes, to sit with it a little, to marinate mm-hmm. in it, mm-hmm. you know, to marinate in your stories and in the messaging that you are here to share. We're not meant to be completely exposed and sharing every aspect of our life and our message at all times. Mm-hmm. We are meant to incubate. We are meant to, you know, cogitate on that and consult maybe even community, mm-hmm. right? And consult our own selves and mm-hmm. listen deeper to that ancestral voice and before we know what it is that we're here to share with the world.
Absolutely. And I think like listening to your intuition as well, right? What is it wanting? One of the beautiful things that our ancestors have, that they will always listen to the intuition, you know. Back then, there's no Google, there's no YouTube, anything. So everything they do, they got to trust books, you know. Some of them can't even read, right? So whatever they do, that they got to trust from inside of them, you know, from the divine, from the sources, from the ancestry to guide them. I think that is amazing. So yeah. Sonali, just to wrap up the conversation, one last final question. What is one fun thing that you do that nobody knows about?
One fun thing that I do that nobody knows about. Oh my gosh. Well, I love to travel. I've been to 33 countries. And of course, you know, being during COVID pandemic times, that was so hard. There's so many times I wanted to get on a plane and just, you know, explore new culture, new smells, new food, new ways of being and thinking. So that is one thing I love to do. Well, I mean, people know that about me, I guess. It's not something that nobody knows about, but I cheated a little. But I do love to travel, Izdahar. That's one of my joys. Aww. You know, whether that's a road trip or, you know, I live in California, as do you. So, you know, we have so many beautiful, you know, sites up the California coast. I believe this is also a part of cultivating our truth and our listening to our voice. When we're in forward movement, when we find our, when we extricate ourselves from our, you know, our home base and go to another place, we kind of come back with a different set of eyes. And I love that. I love that aspect of coming back home with a different set of eyes and a different way of looking at that project or seeing that story through a different lens or understanding people in a different way. Yeah.
That is beautiful. And, you know, I remember in my travel as well, there are people, the certain people that I just remember, you know, in my travel, like they taught me something or they touched me something. So they offered help. Like, I don't even know that person, but when I needed help, they just offer it with generosity. There's no conditional. They gave me like an advice, right? Like, I'm like, oh my God, like I remember the time when I went to a restaurant, I'm like, okay, I want to order this, but just make it like this so that my kids can eat it. And then the guy was like, you should always put yourself first. Your kids can take care of themselves. What is it that you want to eat? Tell me and I'll make it. Cause I'm always like, you know, like, so that guy was like, it's okay for your kids to have something. It's okay for you to have whatever it is that you want. So can you imagine? Like, I went to a shop, right, to a restaurant to order some food. So that is like, sometimes like the message is being sent to us by people. But thank you so much, Sonali, for the beautiful, heartwarming conversation today. How can people find you if they wanted to reach out to you, or they wanted to, you know, have your expertise? What is the best place for them to find you?
Well, firstly, Izdahar, this has been a joy being in conversation with you. I just believe in you and what you're doing in the world, and so happy that I got to, you know, drop into this chat with you.
Thank you.
My pleasure. And folks can find me at SonaliFisk.com. SonaliFisk.com. You can find out more about my work and get in touch with me. You can also follow me on Instagram at Sonali Fisk. And I share a lot of, you know, cool information on there too, about how to work with me and, you know, listen to my radio show that has 6.8 million listeners. So I'm really proud of that, you know. We just celebrated our 3-year anniversary, Rutgers Avenue Radio. We have 6.8 million listeners in a month now, which is extraordinary for us.
Extraordinary. It's
a baby station. You know,
is epic, Sonali. I'm so proud of you and the work that you do.
Again, that's another avenue I get to bring on. Again, my show is just for Black, Indigenous, people of color guests who are really revolutionizing the way we see the world. You know, so that's another platform that I get to use to amplify BIPOC voices. So
absolutely.
Yes, and to more BIPOC voices in the world.
Yay! And hopefully another TED Talk, right? Another TED event coming up really soon. Hopefully like the magic is going to spread out again and feeling again and have that. So that's something that, oh my God, it's just amazing. And I think more people, more Indigenous, more color people just should step up. And the key, like the why I feel is that it's the safety that I felt. Because when I feel safe, I can run. I can just shoot. I can go whoever I need to be in that moment. And that is the beautiful space that Sonali has created. The Sonali and her team, Elena, Natalie, Meredith, and you know, the beautiful team have created. So Sonali, thank you so much for joining me today. For those of you who are listening and would love to share your voices on prestigious platforms around the world without prejudice, whether it's being an author, TV, magazines, Forbes, or TED, check out isdiharjamil.com. Thank you for listening, darlings. Tell yourself, yes, I can. And so it is done. Sonali, let's say goodbye to everybody.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening.